WCNC Charlotte, this is Flashpoint.
Thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. This week, Democratic Governor Roy Cooper blasting House Republicans after they laid out their spending plan for the upcoming year. The governor says the GOP focuses more on culture wars than child care. But Republicans in the House are standing firm, knowing well that Governor Cooper has to sign the budget in order for Medicaid expansion to go into effect. Joining us now, Lincoln County State Representative Jason Sain. He is the House Republican Conference Chair and one of the writers of this year's budget. Mr. Sain, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Ben, thanks for having me on.
All right, the governor issued a statement saying about the budget that the House budget fails public schools while injecting culture wars into classrooms, increasing vouchers for unaccountable private schools, giving even more tax breaks to wealthy people, and letting child care centers fail when they're needed to help get parents back to work. I ask you for your response.
Well, I you know, the governor is certainly poetic as he forms his opinions on our budget. We certainly had opinions on his as well. His would have broken the bank and spent way too much money. You know, the reality is this is both political posturing on both sides. You know, our job is to craft a budget that's reasonable each year, that keeps us living within our means and making sure that we take care of the things that we need to take care of. A lot of it is much of the same things that we've seen that have been entered into the debate for years. The problem this year is the governor has a less of a chance of getting a veto that's sustainable. We have a chance at a possible veto override.
Because Medicaid expansion is tied to the budget, some skeptics or cynics might say that you all have a tremendous amount of leverage over the governor in this, knowing how badly he wants to pass Medicaid expansion to see it goes into effect. Are you all using that as to your advantage?
Oh, sure. I mean, look, this is part of the process, you know, and we do know that it's something that the governor's wanted for a long, long time. I voted against Medicaid expansion, but it finally got enough votes to pass the House. So it's there. It's something he desperately wants. There's some things that we've wanted over the last several years where he wouldn't budge. So, you know, using that leverage to get some of the things that we think are priorities, I think so, just part of the negotiation and getting us to that point. So reality is he, after a long, long fight in his tenure as governor, he finally got the thing that he wanted the most. And so we've given in on that as a House and Senate. There's just some things that we want as well.
Recently, a group of Republicans released what would be a near total ban on abortion, but the speaker said he didn't think that was going to make much progress. So when are we going to get a look at the alternative proposal from Republicans?
I think you'll see that very soon. You know, it's obviously something that keeps being talked about. It's top of mind since the Supreme Court decision. I imagine that bill probably looks something at a like 12-week ban. We're at a 20-week ban now in state law, you know, after 20 weeks. I think probably the number that we land on is somewhere around 12 weeks. The bill that was put out there, I mean, every legislator has a right to file a bill, but I can tell you that one is pretty much dead on arrival just because we don't have enough agreement to get something like that passed, whatever your opinions may be on it. So the speaker was absolutely correct. And I think that is something that is coming soon. It's, you know, it's a long session. So we will get to a lot of big ticket items. That's one that stays at the forefront. And so I'd expect we'll see that in the coming weeks, probably you know, next month or so.
You've been a big supporter of sports betting, the legislation. You recently had an opinion piece in the Charlotte Observer saying if it doesn't pass, North Carolina is just leaving money on the table. Explain.
Yeah, well, reality is their neighbors to the north, Virginia, and over in Tennessee, they have sports betting. And we've got data that shows, I mean, hard data that shows that people every day drive just across the border, use their mobile device, and play sports bets. Since the Supreme Court ruled in 2018 that sports betting was legal, other states have already adopted it. So we're really kind of behind. And the reality is when our folks go into those other markets and spend their money, they're being taxed, and those taxes are going to fund schools, they're going to fund teacher raises, they're going to fund roads in Virginia and Tennessee. So you know, us stopping it was never on the table, right? So because it was already happening, we lose about something around $4 billion each year in sports betting, or sports betting that happens in our state, to the tune of $4 billion. Getting a piece of that tax, we estimate, for what we pass in the House, would bring us somewhere between $60 and $85 million more dollars a year into the state coffers. It goes mostly to the general fund. So it will help fund a lot of the priorities that we've talked about in this budget and budgets to come.
You've introduced a bill looking to legalize happy hour. A lot of folks didn't realize it's not already a thing here in North Carolina. You legally can't have a happy hour as it stands. I don't think it's made a lot of progress, but in general, do you feel like our liquor laws in North Carolina are a bit antiquated and outdated?
As a matter of fact, that's exactly how I describe them most days. They are antiquated. You know, we traditional, you know, Bible Belt South kind of mentality of against liquor, that we have since moved past that. Whatever your personal opinions may be, you know, people have moved into this state from all around. They're very shocked to find out that happy hour is not an actual thing. That you know, in states that they're coming from, they do have it. It's not meant to encourage you know, binge drinking or anything like that. It's really meant to encourage people getting into the restaurants that also offer liquor and you know, the mixed drinks, and so getting them in there so that they're spending money in those restaurants and getting their meal and moving on. It's meant to be at an earlier time of the day, so it's not meant to encourage you know, excessiveness, but it is a tool that those proprietors can use to get people into their business. And like I say, once it became a topic of the day, we got a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails into our office saying, "Oh, we didn't realize that wasn't legal in North Carolina. We just thought that they weren't offering it." So I think it's something that society has kind of moved past. You know, from 20 and 30 years ago, we've seen that with some of the other reforms that we've passed in alcohol. Society doesn't fall into decay. Society doesn't, you know, walk into mass chaos. It's just something I think that would be really just looking at updating and looking at the regulations that would give us put us more in tune with other states.
Your party is filled with free market conservatives and also religious conservatives, all under one umbrella. With that in mind, and if you're a supporter of free markets, I mean, do you think the state should still be in the business of running liquor stores?
Well, if I had my way, it could be king for a day. We would privatize the whole industry. I think that's something that I would like to see. I think we see it in other states. There's other ways to do this, but that's not the reality. That's not something that's going to pass either house in the short run. So I think in the meantime, we have to look at reforms like we're looking at. And kind of, you know, 3.5 yards each time and making progress on those things. So, yeah, as you correctly point out, we've got folks, you know, really on the far right and far left who would not want to see that. So getting that magic number, getting majority, really points more toward smaller reforms in the meantime.
9 years after our first interview here on Flashpoint, Jason Sain, representative of Lincoln County. Mr. Sain, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Ben, thank you so much.
All right, take care. More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. It's not just the Queen City dealing with rising housing costs, transportation issues, and safety. Just west of us, over I-45, Gastonia going through some of these same challenges. Joining us now is the mayor of Gastonia, Walker Reed. Mayor, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, several things we want to talk to you about. I want to start, though, with what's been making news, really here in Charlotte, but across the greater Charlotte area. You're on the Metropolitan Transit Commission, and I know you are aware that there are a series of problems at CATS. In your view, what needs to happen at CATS to regain the trust of its riders and of people like yourself and regional stakeholders as well?
Well, let me put emphasis on that I'm a non-voting member, even though I'm representing Gaston County on the MTC. I think the things that are taking place now will change the management, being more involved with what's going on is making a difference. Holding people accountable is definitely making a difference. And I think the mayor and the MTC, as well as others, have stepped up and really are making them feel accountable to are making them accountable for what they have or have not been doing. So I can see once this thing is ironed out to the point that the management is held responsible for what they're doing, I think it's going to be great for everyone. We're looking forward to it coming into Gaston County.
Yeah.
Basically to relieve us on Interstate I-85.
I was about to ask you, because I know Silver Line would likely really impact the folks there in Gaston County. Do you want to see progress on the Silver Line and the development of it continue despite the current problems at CATS?
Oh, yes. I definitely want to see the progress continue. I think it's a great thing. I had the opportunity to work in Charlotte-Mecklenburg County for 23 years as assistant fire marshal for the county. I've seen firsthand what it has done to the areas, the lines in themselves going north and south, what it's done to the surrounding area. So I think it's a great impact, not only for getting people around, but it's for the development of some of those underserved areas in the city. So yes, I'm definitely in favor.
We talk about affordable housing here in Charlotte all the time and the housing shortage. What about there in Gastonia? What is the housing situation like there in Gastonia as far as finding people good quality affordable homes?
Well, I think there's a problem throughout the nation now. Well, how do you define affordable housing? I mean, that's the question. And basically, how can you get a developer to build homes that's adequate for the pay ranges of those that will qualify as low income? We have tried to work with developers to involve lower rent in apartment complexes that's coming to the city. Some have been in agreement to do that, phasing them in together. I think that would be a great asset. But still, how do you define affordable housing? That's a hard nut to crack. But we are putting forth effort to try to get that here in Gastonia and get developers to see the need to probably build apartments that's going to fit into that category.
Voters recently passing a $75 million bond package. In the first phase, a lot of it's going to go towards repairing roadways. How is the city balancing the need for road improvements with a push for walking accessibility for downtown businesses and things like that?
Well, the city made me feel good. I see them out paving roads this morning on my way into City Hall and see them covering potholes. And we've seen the master plan for what they plan to do with the money. That I'm glad that our citizens saw there was a need to approve this bond, and which we're making efforts now for pedestrian-friendly walking paths, bike paths, and also to assist even the state with road repairs. That's something that we generally don't do, to make things better for our citizens here in Gastonia.
And what else can we expect to look forward to as far as phase two of the project?
Well, I think we're running on schedule. We started pretty much since the bond was approved in November. There's work going on right now, and I think the delay has been the weather. I mean, on any given day, you can't dictate whether we're going to have a cold day or rainy day. And I understand from the guys that's doing the work that if they have good weather, it's better for paving. So I'm elated to see that some of these things are happening, and hopefully our citizens can see their tax dollars at work already, and the vote has made a difference.
Yeah, our meteorologists will take credit for that nice weather. Final question, where do you see Gastonia in 10 years?
Oh boy, you mentioned in 10 years, I think we're gonna see a different Gastonia in the next 3 to 5 years. For the first time as elected official, which is, this is my 21st year, I served 16 years as a councilman, and now I've been the mayor approximately 6 years. This is the first time I've seen development going on the north, south, east, and west part of the city. When I talk about development, I'm talking about positive development that's going to affect a lot of people. So I'm giving it 3 to 5. You mentioned 10, but in 10, I hope I'm around to see the differences at that point. But I think we're going to see a major difference in the next 3 to 5 years here in Gastonia.
All right, ambitious man. All right. Mayor, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the invite. Take care.
Take care. More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Despite a company marketing its safety technology as a way to create weapons-free zones, we've discovered the same body scanners you'll find at middle and high schools across Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium, and even Blumenthal Performing Arts Center are not foolproof. WCNC Charlotte's Nate Morabito discovered Evolve Technology did not disclose failed results to CMS until after the district had already spent millions on those scanners.
The research firm that first got its hands on the results of this confidential field test believes the company has overpromised and created a false sense of security in the process. But Evolve maintains it has remained open with its customers, including CMS, about the technology's limitations. April 2022, Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools produces this video highlighting its new Evolve body scanners.
That process will be very seamless.
They rely on artificial intelligence to quickly identify weapons while ignoring harmless personal items.
We don't have to worry about a threat.
The district even interviewed relieved students about the promise that comes with the touchless technology.
I know that I'm not going to be threatened with any firearms, any knives.
The truth is, neither the students nor CMS can say that with any certainty. After all, a field test just 5 months prior in Ohio found safety gaps. This confidential report, secured by WCNC's sister station in Columbus, shows while the scanners detected almost every gun, they missed one particular kind of gun on two walkthroughs, failed to detect about 4 out of every 10 knives, and had mixed results for a certain type of pipe, which could be used in a bomb.
Evolve has made it sort of very clear that they can't be trusted.
Connor Healy is with IPVM. The research company first obtained the test results through a public records request after the University of Southern Mississippi's National Center for Spectator Sports Safety and Security, or NCS4, mistakenly released the private document.
The CEO has gone on the news and said that they recognize all weapons, and it's patently false.
We don't know whether the schools that buy Evolve are aware that that's false.
Neither Evolve nor CMS would tell us specifically when the company made the district aware of the NCS4 findings. But by August 2022, 4 months after the school system first installed the technology in its high schools, CMS said it was aware of strengths and shortcomings based on discussions with Evolve, people who already have the systems, and the district's own implementation.
You got a knife!
Just months later, the Utica, New York school district removed its Evolve scanners after administrators said a knife got through.
It's not a reliable system for detecting knives.
Evolve changed its marketing language around the same time.
Do you all feel like you've misled your customers?
I hope we have not misled our customers.
Anil Chikara is Evolve's chief growth officer and co-founder.
I hope they are fully informed about what the system does and doesn't do. The worst case would be if they expected it to do something and it doesn't do it.
He says the company is transparent with its customers, openly sharing the technology's limitations.
It's very good. It's not perfect because nothing's perfect.
And providing access to the results of this test and others if customers ask to view the specific results. But the information is not shared with the general public, since Evolve says that would be reckless.
Do you regret the messaging early on?
I think we've talked about the system differently over time.
Words are impactful, and we want to make sure we're using the right words to explain the system. And so we're doing that, and we're working to be better at that every day.
Jill Amon is Evolve's Director of Education. The former assistant superintendent worked in a Michigan district when a mass shooter killed 4 high school students.
The Evolve system was the only way in which I felt comfortable bringing my staff and students back into that physical structure.
Lamond and Chikara told us the company has improved its technology since the 2021 NCS4 test, successfully detecting 170,000 concealed guns and knives in all of 2022, calling the scanners an important layer in an overall security plan, one that's dependent on the specific settings in use, circumstances, and security operations of a venue. CMS declined an on-camera interview. By email, the district said Evolve has always been forthcoming about their systems, adding it's confident that Evolve is proactively taking steps in improving their detection of weapons through their software upgrades since the time of the NCS4 report. Within their first month of use, the scanners found a loaded gun at one CMS high school. The data suggests the mere presence of body scanners has helped deter weapons, too.
The district has reported a huge drop in guns and other weapons found on campuses after the school system moved from random searches to body scanners. But what we don't know is how many, if any, guns or knives have come into schools undetected. Nate Morabito, WCNC Charlotte.
And you might be wondering why we decided to share some of this information, some of the technology's flaws. Since these scanners are so widely used here and have cost CMS more than $16 million, we felt taxpayers deserve to know what they can and what they, frankly, can't do. Beyond that, the school district assures it has multiple layers of security in place to protect students, teachers, and staff. More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Come interact with us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it, we're there. And if there's something you want us to talk about here on Flashpoint, let us know. And as always, remember to listen and subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you get yours. And we'll see you back here next weekend.